Torah Jazz, Session 8, Le David. So I woke up with a bit of a hoarse throat today. So I thought I'd do my best Barry White because, hey, let's get this Torah on. May as well take advantage of whatever situation you're in, right? Okay, so I really wanted to do Le David because, you know, it's Elul. And people talk about Elul being tshuva season, right? It's a season to do tshuva. That's what's in the air. That's what people are talking about. Or that's what we should be talking about and thinking about at least. And, you know, tshuva's hard. It's complex. We work at it. We struggle. We have our ups and our downs. But one thing is for sure, it's definitely Le David season. We are definitely going to be saying Le David twice a day, right? The whole of Elul. And the truth is, you know, because tshuva is so hard, it's such a difficult process, why not try to tap in to some of the amazing tools that our chachamim, our sages over the generation, have given us, ways that they deemed as appropriate to help us to tap in to this tshuva season, right? To help us with our tshuva process. So Le David, I mean, I think everybody, maybe only some of us, but I mean, it's always such a beautiful capital of Psalms, such a beautiful paragraph of Psalms. Just the imagery and the language is so passionate and powerful and beautiful that I always felt very connected to this particular Tehillim. So I'd get very excited every time Elul would come around to be able to say it and to reflect on it again. I think about 3 or 4 years ago, I finally was like, oh, you know, there must be a really good reason why we say Le David and Elul, right? I meaning, I know I had read the stuff that they wrote in the footnotes on Art Scroll 100 times, but I was looking for a better, deeper explanation. So this is a mahalach I'd been thinking about for the last 3 or 4 years. So we'll go through Le David, and I'll give, hopefully, two sort of different approaches, but obviously parallel, because I mean, we're talking about Tehillim here. So Tehillim is so level. There's so much going on. There's so many layers in Tehillim, right? And even Le David could be explained on the level of the most pashat pshat, right? Where was King David during this time? What was he struggling with, right? What exactly was happening that inspired him to write this? And of course, there are going to be much deeper, richer ideas packed into every word of Le David. So that's what we're hoping to understand. And Le David, really, if you look at it, has 4 sections. For those of you who want to find it, obviously in the back of the Siddur after morning prayers, but then also in Tehillim, in Psalms, it's the 27th chapter, Perek chapter, if you want to see commentary in there, and etc. So Le David, really, if you look at it, is broken down into 4 parts, right? And these 4 parts, you know, I just going to have to give them my own names. Part 1 is the part about going to war. It's all about battle and confidence in battle. And part 2 would be celebrating the victory, you know, celebrating and offering sacrifices and blowing shofar. Now, part 3 comes in this period of despair after the victory. And part 4, I like to call it hope. This was the new hope before George Lucas. So these are the 4 distinct sections of Le David. And we're going to have to understand how they tie in to Elul and what we can take out of Le David. So first of all, why do we read Le David during Elul? So a lot of people quote the Medrash, and the Medrash says that Ori V'Yishi, these 2 first parts of Le David, are referring to Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, right? Le David Hashem Ori V'Yishi, God is my light, He's my salvation. God is my light is Rosh Hashanah. God is my salvation, that's Yom Kippur. And then in some versions of the Medrash, it points out further on here that it says Besuko Yitzpeneni Besuko B'Yom Ra'o, God tucks me away. He covers me in his sukkah, in his tabernacle, on a day of, how would we call it, Biyom Ra'ah? We don't want to just say a bad day, but a day of misfortune. Okay? Good. So they bring those three. Now, there are also Midrashim that bring a fourth possibility, which is Shmini Atzeres, and we'll talk about how Shmini Atzeres shows up in LeDavid. And finally, and here's the thing, when you start to find out, LeDavid was a more recent minhag, certainly not more than 400 years old. See, as far as we know, that has been recorded, that people have been saying LeDavid during Elul, and it seems like it started primarily as a Ashkenazi minhag, and only later spread to other circles. It seems like there are still communities nowadays who don't even say LeDavid during Elul. So when you quote some of the reasons what LeDavid has to do with Elul, you find a lot of different sources for who's saying what. It's much less clear, since it's not clearly written in any of the Sifrei Rishonim, as to why one should say during Elul, and it's not brought down in any of the Sifrei Halacha until, you know, the Mishnah Berurah points it out, but the Shulchan Aruch doesn't mention it at all, which means that neither do the, you know, the Rosh or the Rambam or the Tur, right? One of the big things that people point out when they talk about why we say LeDavid during this time of Elul. So one of the things that's brought down in connection to what we're saying over here is that the final word, the final two psukim of LeDavid, we say, Lule he'emanti liros betuv Hashem, were it not that I had faith to see the goodness of Hashem. And Lule here is written in an unusual way. Lule is usually written with a yud. And I believe also that it has here dots around it, or it should have dots around it. Let's see if it does in the Tehillim that I'm holding. Yeah, Lule has dots over the word Lule, which usually signifies there's some sort of a drush over here. So from there, now I saw this in the name of Rav Chaim Filaji. I'm sure there are other Sifrei Kabbalah that mention this idea, Sfarim Kadoshim that mention this idea, that Lule is the word Elul, right? Written backwards. So Lule he'emanti l'ros b'tuv Hashem, right? Were it not that I had faith, that's the word of Elul, and there we have another remez, another allusion as to why we should say LeDavid during Elul. There are other things that are mentioned that David particularly is dealing with. If you go look in Rav Bernstein's new Sefer on Tshuva, he writes beautifully in the first chapter that LeDavid's all about a relationship with Hashem and clinging to Hashem, and that's what these days of Tshuva, which start with Rosh Chodesh Elul, are. As is brought down in all the Sfarim, that these are the 40 days representing the 40 days of Ratzon between the time that Moshe went up to write the second, to carve the second Luchos, and the time that Moshe came down on Yom Kippur. It's a special time of closeness to the Kodesh Baruch Hu, and LeDavid is all about being close to Hashem. And also in the in the Shar Kavanos of the Ari, so he brings down that the God's name is mentioned 13 times, right? And that correlates with the 13 attributes of Hashem's mercy, which we're trying to awaken in this time. Okay, so we're going to have some questions. And one of the questions that we're going to ask is, other than the fact that Elul just sort of happened to fall out, right, 40 days before Yom Kippur, is there anything else significant to Elul that naturally maybe it's a time for coming close to Kodesh Baruch Hu? And also, it just is something, a question, and it's something that's really, this in itself is just something that I could reflect on almost all of Elul. Usually when we speak about Elul, when we talk about the uniqueness of the month of Elul, people bring out all sorts of beautiful allusions that it's the Rosh HaTevos, it's the acronym for the Pasuk in Shir HaShirim, Ani Ladodi Vadodi Li, I am to my beloved and my beloved is to me. There are other psukim, Es Libi V'Es Lev Zari, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu brings close my heart and the heart of my offspring. You know, all sorts of really wonderful, lovely allusions. The one here in LeDavid is a little bit peculiar, Because the word Elul here, which usually is coming to signify all sorts of closeness and connection, here it means were it not. It's like this word of almost like insecurity. Lule hamanti, if I only because I have this little bit of hope, right? Whereas normally it's a much stronger, clear connection. Here it's like we're not that I just had this one little thing. And that in itself is sort of makes you wonder, well, what's the Elul aspect of a lule? Right? What about lule in itself is Elul? Okay, I understand. The letters are there. But the word itself, right? How does that help us to connect to the notion of Elul? Okay, and also that's sort of reflected in the Ladavid itself. You know, if you look at the Ladavid and you try to follow the story, you see that it follows an interesting plot line, which is that at first, David HaMelech is very confident. Starts off with tremendous strength. You know, God is my light. He is my salvation. I don't fear anybody. When enemies come against me, that's their problem. They're all going to fall. Right, I have no fear against people encamping against me. It's tremendous confidence and strength in the relationship with the Kodesh Baruch Hu. And it just builds into this fever pitch in the next step, which is God will hide me, I'll connect with him, we'll bring sacrifices. You know, it's crescendoing into this ecstasy of singing out and bursting out in song and bringing korbanos. And then all of a sudden, the whole thing sort of shifts and takes a hard turn. And David starts to seemingly despair. Shema Hashem, koli akra, right? Chaneni v'aneni, lecha amar libi, bakshufanai espanecha Hashem avakesh. David saying, Hashem, please don't turn away from me. Please don't disappear. Please don't hide. Can you hear me? I'm calling out to you. And it's very strange because we were just in this deep, close, connected relationship with Hashem, and all of a sudden, right, we're in despair. And then the very end is like even beyond despair, because it's like all I have left is hope. Lule manti deres b'tuv Hashem, were it not that I had this bit of hope to see the goodness of God. Yeah, Eretz Chaim, right, in the world to come, not even now, not even the present. The hope I'm holding out is for some event in the future. Were it not that I had that hope? And then we don't even finish the sentence. We just say, Kavel Hashem, Chazak V'am Yisrael, Kavel Hashem. Just have hope in Hashem. Have hope and have hope. And as long as you have hope, you're going to be good. Right? The pasuk can't even say, it says, were it not that I had this faith, right, to see the goodness in the world to come, that what? Were it not, and then what? We didn't finish the sentence. And it just says, have faith. It's almost like, I can't even finish the sentence. All I have is my faith, right? So it's again, it's like it's like an Elul. We're talking about running out to the field and meeting the king and getting close. It seems like the end is a very sort of like a weak, lost feeling. So why do we have this sort of weak, lost feeling in connection to Elul? And also, by the way, if we are following in the Medrash and continuing through the Sfarim Kedoshim, a cycle of tshuva, right? So it's interesting that we start the tshuva process in Elul, but the Ladavid starts in Rosh Hashanah, moves to Yom Kippur, then goes to Sukkot, Shemitah, Atzeret, and ends with Elul. That Elul is actually at the end of it, and that's sort of like a bizarre thing, because for us, Elul is like the beginning of something, right? Hagam, that, right, in the end of the day, it's true. Elul is the end of the year. It's not the beginning of the year. But when we think of tshuva, we think of starting with Elul. What good does it do us to end with Elul? Like, that's it. That's the end of the year. It's time for a new year. So see, these are some of the questions that hopefully we're going to answer. But before we do that, I want to share a event that occurred to me. And the reason I want to share is because it's very interesting. And I'm not normally one to get too concerned or caught up or overly thoughtful about specific events that happen in my life. I mean, maybe I should, right? But at the end of the day, you know, I'm definitely not on the level of Isser Zalman Meltzer, right? The whole Zecher Tzadik Levracha, with the whole story that their milk boiled over, and because the milk boiled over and the milk never boils over, so he sat with the rabbits in and they tried to figure out, and what could she have done? And it turned out that she forgot to pay the milkman, and the milkman was very poor, and he ran over to give him the money, right? You know, when the milk boils over in my house, I figure it's because I wasn't paying enough attention to how high I put the fire. But this event that happened was so bizarre, it was so strange, that I had to like really just try to take a moment to say, okay, why did Hashem want me to witness this thing? So I'll tell you what happened. I was standing at the bus station on here in lovely Carmiel, on Rehov Murat Hagai, on Murat Hagai Street, and I was waiting for the bus pointed in the direction of the Rabin neighborhood, right, moving uptown. And it was a Friday. You don't usually take the bus on Friday. That Friday I happened to be taking the bus. And I was standing and I was waiting at the bus stop. And all of a sudden, down the hill, it's a bit hilly, especially there, it's an incline, I see this figure pushing a shopping cart. Now, till the figure comes into focus a little bit, you see this shopping cart, and he's working very hard, slowly pushing this shopping cart up the hill. Now, I'll be honest with you, I don't even remember what was in the shopping cart, because that was the last thing that I really noticed about the situation, and I'm not even sure there was much in it. And the figure behind the shopping cart was this little old man who looked very unwell, but very unwell. And who seemed to own nothing more than a pair of jeans. That is to say, he had no shirt on, and no socks, and no shoes. And he was walking barefoot up the street, pushing this shopping cart. And he was hunched over terribly. Walking seemed to be very difficult. His feet were malformed. And, you know, it just sort of catches you off guard trying to understand who, you know, what's going on, you know. And obviously, your heart opens up to this person. And I'm sort of watching this with curiosity to try to see, like, where's he going? Like, what's he doing? Like, what does he want? And all of a sudden, he stops. And he's still a bit of a distance from me. He turns his shopping cart out towards the street. And he stands and he looks for a while. And he reaches into the back pocket of his jeans. And he pulls out a smartphone. And, you know, the irony of it was just so bizarre. Like, what? What? Why does he have a smartphone? He doesn't even have socks. Like, you know, who's he gonna call? Like, who's he calling? Does he have money on the smartphone? Does he have a battery inside of it? I don't even know. I couldn't tell. I don't think it was actually a functioning smartphone. I don't know. You know. And he like looked at the screen for a little bit, and then he just put it back in his pocket, and he didn't do anything with it. And then my bus came. And I just was, you know, you could just brush over this sort of event and whatever, but I was like, okay, you know what? It's Elul. Let's try to think. What was that moment? Like, what was he, like, what did Hashem want me to see? You know, that I had to be at this bus stop, which is not a bus stop I'm normally at, on this day, which is not a day I'm normally waiting for a bus, in this 5 minutes, which is not the typical 5 minutes that I'm waiting for a bus, to witness this event. What? What could it mean? What was that? So I thought about it, and, you know, with this sort of exercise, I don't know that one should try too hard to get the metaphor just right. I think the point is that it is personal. And for whatever reason, I thought about the man with the cell broken with this smartphone, and I thought of myself when I come to Daven. Why?
I know, I just sort of think about the fact that, you know, when we come to request things from Hashem, when we come to do our Avodas Hashem sometimes, I think we just look a little bit weird, foolish. Like the point is, like, all our priorities are out of place. Like, you know, the last thing I would have expected this man to need to worry about is a smartphone. And why did he have it? And why did he want it? Like, why did he even want the thing? I don't know, maybe because, you know, nowadays, that's what you do. You have a smartphone. And I started to think of sort of like all the things that we do that, like, we don't even know why we do them, why they're important to us, why we care about them. And then, like, we're walking around without shoes and without socks. You know, the basic necessities of what it means to be a good Jew, of what it means to be a good person. It's just like, you know, I'm missing them personally sometimes. You know, I come to Davin and, you know, we could think about all sorts of high kavanos and, you know, what we're supposed to be thinking about and connecting to and how we're holding our bodies and et cetera. And it's like, well, did you actually focus on what you're saying? You know, like, how connected are you to the words? Are you thinking that you're standing in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right? The famous Reb Chaim, right, that opens up the Reb Chaim on the Rambam, where he speaks about the fact that the step one to davening, before you get to the kavanah on the words, is to have the kavanah that you're talking to Hashem. So I just sort of thought about this thing, and you can, you know, I just thought about a lot, all sorts of examples, you know, like going over to tell somebody, ask somebody, well, in their middle of Kriya Shema, you know, are my tefillin on straight? You know, this sort of a thing. We get very concerned if our tefillin are on straight. Which, by the way, if I'm before tefillah, what I tell people, but don't say this to people, I say it because I like them. I tell them, your tefillin are on straight, but your head's on crooked. but anyways, you know, but going to people in the middle of tefillah concerned about our tefillin on straight, you know, or, you know, a person who could be very proud of the fact that he, you know, checks his tefillin, you know, every 2 years, but, you know, then doesn't have any kavanah when he puts on his tefillin, or falls asleep in his tefillin, or people who, you know, we get very excited about the mitzvahs of Ahavsar HaKamocha, and we speak about it on Tisha B'Av, and then people forget that those mitzvahs apply to his wife and children also. You know, so there's a lot of times where I just think of us, and it's like, or myself, right, mainly, not here to most or anybody else, and I think of that image of the man, it just seems very matim. But so that brings up this sort of a question, well, like, if that's us, if that's me, if I'm so foolish, if I'm so ridiculous, if my priorities are so out of line, what chance do I ever have, what hope do I ever have of making something good, doing something good with myself? And so that's why I think L'David is actually really powerful, because L'David, hopefully, if we understand it right, at the end, will give this sort of, come to a answer, a help, a support for ourselves. So, first of all, I don't want to say in any way that this is a conclusive Mahalach in L'David. It's not, right, there are many ways to interpret it. This is one that I connected to very strongly. It's also one that I spoke over with Rabbi Gershenfeld at some point. Following the course of the months of the year, to understand our process and our journey. So first of all, let's just start with the fact that we're saying that Hashem is Ori V'Yishi, right? God is my light and my salvation. Now, God is my light, it refers to Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah is the day of light because it's the day where we are Mamlech Hashem. It's the day where all we speak about is the fact that God is the King. Now, I one time heard, and this was like 13 years ago, so I believe it was Rabbi Gottlieb came to Los Angeles, and I heard him speaking there, and he asked the question why Rosh Hashanah was the first of the Asar Simei Tshuva, right? We don't do any tshuva on Rosh Hashanah. Why do we think of Rosh Hashanah as part of the tshuva process? You know, all that we do, we don't say vidui, we don't do tshuva. All we do is we speak about the fact that God is the King. Now, of course, it's in essence a day of judgment. That's the Mishnah is very clear in Rosh Hashanah that's what Rosh Hashanah is. It's the day where all the people of all of mankind has to pass in front of Hashem, like sheep or like the ascent to Meron. and we're judged. So it is a day of judgment. But why is it a day? In what way do we see that we are somehow connecting it to the process of tshuva? So he gave a much longer, complicated answer, but the simple understanding is that when you understand that Hashem is the Melech, then you understand that you are a Ben Melech, right? If you think that your day-to-day work, like let's say you just get caught up in the regular day-to-day, you know, process of life, so some people would actually think that their job, they came into this world to delete emails off of their server. Or they came into this world to wash dishes and throw out the garbage. Like they think they're dishwashers and garbage men. So if you think you're a dishwasher or if you think you're a garbage man, so then, you know, how well you behave, how much you do certain things, you know, it's less important because at the end of the day, for goodness sake, you're just a garbage man. You're just a dishwasher. However, if somebody comes at some point and reminds you, yes, you're not just a dishwasher, you're not just a garbage man, you also happen to be the Ben of the Melech, you also have to be the son of the king. So at that point, everything changes. Well, if I'm the son of the king, I can't behave the way I'm behaving. I can't walk outside in the way that I've been walking outside. I have to change a few things. So the Rosh Hashanah is the beginning of the tshuva process because when we're mamlech Hashem, when we make Hashem the melech, when we make Hashem the king, then we realize that the whole world is his kingdom and we are children of the king. If you can realize that the whole world is his kingdom, if you can realize that we are children of the king, so that changes our approach to everything. And that actually sets the foundation that allows us to properly do tshuva. Because if you really still want to do the Avera, that's not called tshuva. And if you say, I know I shouldn't do it, but I want to do it, then you're not going to succeed in doing tshuva. But if you're able to say, oh my gosh, why in the world am I wasting my time with this shtuyot? If a person can have that sort of a mind shift, that sort of a change, look, it's not that like I really shouldn't, you know, watch this type of movie, but what am I supposed to do? You know, it's really entertaining. If a person say, oh my gosh, that type of movie is so not my team for me, right? It's unthinkable that I would even watch such a thing. Then he's able to properly do tshuva. So the first step of the year, the first step of relationship with Hashem, the first step to doing tshuva is Hashem Ori, Hashem is my light. Step two is Hashem is my salvation, Hashem Yishi. Right? You see that David Melch puts them right after the Hashem Ori V'Yishi. They come together, right? Hashem Ori V'Yishi, Mimi Efchad, when I have both the elements, Mimi Ira, when I have both the light and the salvation, then I have nothing to fear from. Because a human also realizes that at the end of the day, as much as we're children of Hashem, we're still human beings. And human beings fall, right? There's no tzaddik who comes into the world and doesn't sin, right? A tzaddik has to fall 7 times and then he stands up a tzaddik. There are mistakes that happen. We fall, we fail. It's only because the Kodesh Baruch Hu gives us the path of tshuva that a person can fully process himself. He knows that even if he falls, Hashem is not going to abandon him. He always has the ability to pick himself up, to fix himself up. We see by Adam Arishon in the Medrash, the Mizmor Shel Yom HaShabbos, Adam Arishon wrote it, right? The first man wrote it after he bumped into Cain, after he bumped into Cain and saw that tshuva was a possibility. Up until then, he had been off, you know. Adam HaRishon was not filling his mission in the world. It was only once he bumped into Cain, and he saw that a person's capable of doing tshuva, he came back, he did tshuva, that's when Shes was born, Seth, and the world was back on its path. Adam HaRishon was back on his mission. So we have the two steps of Ori V'Yishi, the days of Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, where a person sees the light, he embraces God's salvation. Now, when he does that, he has nothing to fear, right? In all these battles, You could learn it in the Pashup Shot. They were talking about physical battles, actual ones that happened to David. Or there are those who want to split it up into physical, and the first half physical, the second half spiritual. But I think that in this Mahalach, it works very well, and the second one that we'll be mentioning also, that we're talking about the struggles with the Yetzer Hara that a person has, the struggles with tshuva, since the cycle of the Ledavid is following the cycle of tshuva. So we're going to understand that this is all to do with tshuva and the milchama, right, which works very well with the milchama of the Yetzer Hara, that we're always fighting it with the Yetzer Hara. Like Yeshua says, Kol milchama b'machane, right, the sound of the war in the camp when he's talking about the Jewish people doing the sin of the golden calf, the chet ha'egel. Okay, so we speak about the fact that when a person connects to the light of Rosh Hashanah and the salvation of Yom Kippur, so then he has nothing to fear in a time of war. He's always confident in his relationship with Hashem, and that's why the final words of this section, Bezos ani voteach, in this I shall trust, we're going with the Mefarshim that are referring to the first few psukim. I trust that when I stay connected to Hashem, nothing can ever harm me. Now, the second part, where we're moving into Sukkos, goes from the Sur Meira, the moving away from the Yetzer Hara, the struggle with evil inclination, and we're coming now to the Asei Tov, the Dveikus, the connection to Hashem. Now that I'm away from all my sins, now that I've come to a place where I feel clean, I feel presentable, I feel like the son of the king, Achas Shalti, I only have one request from Hashem. All I want to do is to sit in God's house, right, all the days of my life, and to see and to dwell in His Noam, His splendor, beauty, glory, right? And to investigate or to visit his heichal, his sanctuary. Now, ki itzpaneni b'sukoi b'yom ro'o, when God hides me in His sukkah, that's our allusion to Sukkos. Now we're moving through the year, right? We've had Rosh Hashanah, we've had Yom Kippur. In what way does Sukkos fit in this concept of God hiding me inside of His sukkah? Now it's very interesting because you're going to see there's two steps. There is Yitzpaneni b'sukoi, and right after that there's Yastireni b'seser aholo, right? That God conceals me in the concealment of His tent. So we have here 2 degrees seemingly, because to be tsafun, which means to be like tucked away, is not nearly the same level as being nistar, right? If you're nistar, then you're gone. No, you're not visible, you're not seen, people don't even realize you're here. And a sukkah, which is open, and a ohel, a tent, which is closed. And actually, learning this helped me a lot, as I was also learning Hilchos Sukkah last year. I happened to coincide the two together. It actually helped me to really appreciate what Sukkos is all about on a much deeper level. So we're saying the first part is protection from the Yetzer Hara by connecting to Hashem. The second part of the Sukkah is the next step. It's actually dwelling with Hashem, right? Actually bringing Hashem into your own life. So a sukkah, what's amazing about a sukkah is open. And this actually has nafkaminas lahalacha in the Darkei Moshe over there, who speaks about whether or not a sukkah being open to the public is a problem, not a problem, people stealing from it, not... That the whole point of a sukkah, the way of a sukkah, is that it's open. You're exposed. The ikar of the sukkah, the main part of the sukkah, is the tzel, the schach, on top, that it shades you. It's not to protect you from the winds. And that's why a sukkah is kosher, even if it only has 2 walls and 1 tefach, one little, how do you say tefach? Not a hand's breadth. One little hand's breadth, right? Well, the shlishi really is a mashahu, but we learned that it's a hand's breadth and etc. Okay. So the whole point of a sukkah is that it's open. So it's very interesting. The first part is we're saying that God will tuck me away in his sukkah, which means I'm totally exposed to the elements, which I believe is why it says in the verse, "Biyom ra'ah," going back on the sukkah. Ki yitzbanenu b'sukkah biyom ra'ah. Right? On the day of ra'ah, the day of chisaron, the day where things are lacking from the world, where I'm still yet in a place where the world is not yet in its tikkun, it's not yet fully perfected. I am dwelling with Hashem, even though all these things are happening around me, I'm exposed, I'm watching the world, but God's shade is always over me. That's why, also by the way, we have the halacha in a sukkah that you have to be able to see the stars. The Prima Gadim over there learns that it's because of the inyan of mi bara eile, lios b'shamayim ba'aretz. It's to remind us, right, that we're in the world, right? We're in the physical world. We're looking for Hashem in the physical world. So we have to remember that the idea of a sukkah, when a person comes to sit in a sukkah, is this is the festival of finding Hashem, connecting Hashem in the physical world. And that's why on Sukkot, right, when we had the Beis HaMikdash, when we had the Holy Temple, we brought sacrifices for the other nations of the world, right, for the 70 nations. Because it's all a remembrance, a reminder that we live together in one world together, and we have to find and connect to Hashem in this world. However, the next little bit is Yastireni Beseser Ahalo, that man that David HaMelech, King David, is requesting to be hidden away in the Ohel. Now, an Ohel is Dafka, is specifically the opposite of a Sukkah. The point of an Ohel is to be hidden, to be tsanua, to not be seen, right? That's why Bilam, when he sees the Jewish people, that their tents don't face each other, he says, Ma tovu alecha Yaakov, right? How good are your tents, Yaakov, right? That the Jewish people didn't want to look into each other's homes. They respected each other's privacy. The person, that a tent is specifically the idea of privacy. So to be totally hidden in a tent, so there, the Yom Ra doesn't exist anymore because I'm tucked away, I'm gone. It's just me and Hashem. There's no one else, there's no distractions. And that correlates to Shemini Atzeres, but I'll give you an even bigger connection, which is the next part of the verse is Bitzur Yero Memeni, that God lifts me up on a rock. That Shemini Atzeres is specifically connected to the idea of Romamus, of being to be lifted up, to be elevated. Where do we see that from? So it's actually very interesting. We have a certain little section that we say in our prayers during the holiday season. Every time it's one of the festivals, right? We add this little bit, or during the High Holy Days, we add this little bit in the prayers, where we say, Ata v'chartanu mikol amim. We say, Hashem, you have chosen us from amongst all the nations. Ahavta osanu, you loved us. V'ratzisavanu, you desired us. V'romamtanu mikol aloshonos. So the Gaon in his Perush, in his commentary on the Siddur, actually chooses every one of those out to represent a different aspect of the festivals. And the continuation also to represent Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. But Ata v'chartanu, right? You have chosen us. Where does God where did God choose us? That was during Pesach, right? When God chose us to be his chosen people and took us out of the land of Israel, that's Ata v'chartanu. Right? Ahavta osanu, where do we see God's love for us? That is on Shavuos. That's the day of our wedding, of the chuppah, of connecting to Hashem, of getting the Torah. That is what Ahavta osanu. V'ratzisavanu, where is God's ritzui for us, his desire for us? That comes specifically on Sukkos. Why? Because at that point, the Jewish people, this is going according to the according to the explanation of the Gaon in another place, that Sukkot celebrates the time that the clouds of glory came back after we had sinned. We saw that God truly forgave us because the clouds of glory returned to the Jewish people. Also because it's the time that after the tshuva season, we go back to the Beis HaMikdash, we get to reconnect with Hashem. We see that despite our shortcomings, despite our mistakes, Hashem still loves us. He still wants us to come and to connect to Him. That is Sukkos. V'ramamtanu mikol ha'lashonos, that You elevated us amongst all the languages, amongst all the peoples of the world, because on Shmini Atzeres, we no longer bring sacrifices for the rest of the nations of the world. We only bring one sacrifice to represent the Jewish people, and it's our day alone with Hashem, like all the Chazal talk about, the Midrashim talk about, and the Gemara, about having a day where the King is going to be just with us. Okay? Beautiful. So Romamus correlates to Shmini Atzeres. Betzur Yerom Imeni. Great. So now we have this moment of ecstasy and celebration. And after that, we spoke about Shema Hashem Koli Ekra. That all of a sudden, it's almost like the rug is pulled out from under us. And King David starts to, you know, call out to Hashem. Do You hear me? Where are You, right? Hashem, what's going on? And the question is, why does King David all of a sudden lose faith? Where did all this desperation finally, suddenly come from? So, if you notice, you know, the space, there's no time of the year where we're closer to Hashem than on Shmini Atzeres. We're so close, in fact, you know, that it's another one of these times of year where we don't have any physical mitzvahs on Shmini Atzeres. The whole point of the day, there's no even learning Torah. The whole point of the whole day is just to be close to Hashem. And after that, it's going to be a very long time. Right? We have a full year till we're going to get back to this point. And it's really the concept that comes into our life all the time of inspiration. We get inspired, we get picked up, we feel close to Hashem. And then we have to take that inspiration, that pick-me-up, and we have to work on the process of internalizing it, making it part of us, making it part of our lives, and carrying it with us, because we don't want to have to rely on Hashem to always, you know, show Himself, reveal Himself in some sort of way to help us feel connected. We want to be able to take the clues that Hashem has given us and internalize and make them part of our lives, like the famous Ramban at the end of Parshas Bo, right? That Ramban goes at length, that the whole point of the miracles of Egypt was so that we should be able to find the small miracles of our lives and realize that they're all coming from the same place and to teach us the same idea. And they're always to connect with Hashem, right? To bring Hashem into every aspect of our life. So as we go through the year, this point of desperation in the Ladavid, the calling out, the begging Hashem, don't hide Your face from me, right? It's these moments that we feel, right? People get there are some people who get excited for Yom Kippur. I've heard a lot of people who say Yom Kippur is my favorite holiday. Why? Because they love that moment of, that's it, I can do it, I'm going to bare my soul, I'm going to connect to Hashem, I'm going to be clean, and now I'm going to grow close to Him in Sukkos and Shmini Atzeres, and it's a big high, right? But now what? Like, what do you do for the rest of the year? You have to try to find those highs on your own. We can't just be spiritually dead for the rest of the year. So David HaMelech is, right, Sur Mera Aseh Tov, Rodef Shalom Ve'Aseyu, he's clinging, he's searching, he's trying to build, he's trying to create that connection with Hashem to find it once again, to discover it without the outside power of Ori, V'Yishiv, Sukkah, and Yerumimeni, right, of Hashem coming out to give it to us. And that encapsulates so beautifully in the last two psukim, Lule Hemanti Liros Betuv Hashem, right? That sometimes by the end of the year, Elul comes, you're so far from the last Yom Kippur, from the last Sukkos, from the last Shmini Atzeres. You've had this whole year of struggling, trying to find Hashem. that there's nothing left from the original, you know, fuel that was put into you. That all you have left is Lule Hemanti. All that's keeping me going is the Amuna and what's gonna be. What I have now, I have nothing left now. But Lule Hemanti Esmetuv Hashem Beretz Chaim, I know what keeps me going every day is that little faith that I have that in the world to come, that what's happening up ahead, it's gonna be good. And the ending lines, so beautiful, so real. Kaveh Hashem, Chazak v'Amitz Yisrael, Kaveh Hashem. At the end of the day, it all comes to Kaveh Hashem. I have nothing left. What was I to start with? The one thing that I have is I'm Kaveh Hashem. I just have faith. I just have hope. Right? In Hashem, I know that Hashem cares about me even if I can't see it, even if I can't feel it. I have the hope that's almost expressionless. I can't even finish the sentence. It's just hope for the sake of hope. Of connecting to Hashem. And so the word Elul, that Lule, just to try to connect it to the idea of Elul, and then we're going to have to try to understand all the other ideas of Elul, is to say that Elul is the end of the year. Right? It's after all the fuel for tshuva has already gone out of us. And all we have left is this Lule Heamanti L'Ros Betuv Hashem. Now, what is it about Elul? Right, we spoke about the fact that Elul was that 40-day period of Moshe going up to write the Luchos Shnios. And we said that specifically is a period, right, as Rav Bernstein writes over there so beautifully, that Rashi expresses, that it's a time where Hashem is makabel our tshuva b'simcha. He's happy with us once again. It's not just that we've gotten off the hook, but that he actually feels good about us, right, in our relationship with him from the fact that we've done sincere tshuva. So what is it about those Elul days that made them so special than the 40 days before when Moshe Rabbeinu was praying? Right? We hear a lot about what Moshe Rabbeinu is during that time, but what are the Jewish people doing that during that time? Those 40 days when Moshe is writing the Luchos, it seems like it's already a done deal. And yet there's somehow an extra level of ritzui, of love and appreciation for us when Moshe comes down, although, like, what did we do during those 40 days? Well, certainly the Chumash doesn't record what we did or what we did being of significance. So actually, it's very fascinating that the first time, and we see it, we just saw it a few weeks ago in the Parsha, that when Moshe Rabbeinu comes down for Chet HaEgel, when he comes down to witness what's going on and to eventually rebuke the Jewish people, it says that a harbor ba'esh, the mountain was on fire. Now, why was the mountain on fire, right? Because of Chet HaEgel, suddenly the mountain caught fire? So the commentaries explain that the mountain was still burning with the fire of the giving of the Torah, right? When the Torah was given, there were all sorts of miracles that occurred during that time, and one of them that the whole mountain was ablaze with fire. So the Mefarshim explain, the commentaries explain that the fire hadn't even gone out on the mountain. All the signs and miracles of receiving the Torah were still there, and the Jewish people still did the sin. And you know, this is just something that's, you know, something that we always need to think about, that sometimes the metaphor that I like to use is like a 35-year-old still living with his parents, you know, which, look, if you are, it's fine, you know, kol kavod to you, you know, keep strong. That eventually at some point, the parental relationship, which starts very healthy when a child is young, can become very unhealthy if a child's still relying on his parents, still living with them, turning to them. At a certain point of his life, it can become unhealthy. So when a Kosh Baruch Hu, the presence is so strong, right? Kosh Baruch Hu is with us. The signs of Har Sinai are still in the air. Sometimes we start to lose the appreciation of their value. They stop affecting us to the point that they could still do Chet HaEgel while the signs of the giving of the Torah were still extant. So what's amazing about the second time that Moshe Rabbeinu goes up is that there's no more fire on the mountain. Moshe Rabbeinu once again disappears. And, you know, this time there's no excitement, there's no Moshe Rabbeinu is coming down in 40 days. This was a time of greater uncertainty than the first time around. And here, the holy atmosphere in the air is gone. We were so close to Hashem at the time of the giving of the Torah. We still had that spiritual uplift when Moshe Rabbeinu disappeared. And still, we were able to bow into the pressure of the evil inclination. Right? And here, the second time around, that's it. There's more uncertainty. We're all, you know, unsure of what our final situation is going to be. Is Hashem going to, you know, receive our tshuva? Not going to receive our tshuva fully? We don't know. And in those moments, Klal Yisrael were able to overcome the Yetzer Hara. They didn't fall a second time, right? So there's that aspect of Lulei Ha'amanti L'Ros B'Tuv Hashem. At this point, the Jews turn around and they say, oh my gosh, what good are we? Look how badly we fell. Look how little we have to offer Kosh Baruch Hu, right? I mean, if a Kosh Baruch Hu wants us, that in itself is a miracle. Lulei Ha'amanti L'Ros B'Tuv Hashem. Were it not that we had faith in the goodness of a Kosh Baruch Hu, and that faith alone is what kept us going during that time. So when we talk about Elul and the other aspects of it, Ani L'Dodi V'Dodi Li, it being a time of closeness to Hashem, I think that the reason is because Elul is a time where we're so far from Hashem, that Hashem runs out to the field to greet us because we're still holding on. Chet Egel was the worst possible violation of trust, right? Our sages compare it to adultery. Right? Adultery is the most horrible violation of a person's trust that you can imagine. That's what we did to Hashem. Elul is the opposite. It's like the bride of the soldier, you know, who waited long years through all sorts of uncertainty and maintained her faith and was faithful to him, right? That's a time where the love grows because we're so distant, because we are doing it just for the sake of Hashem. We don't feel like we even have anything to offer, right? We know that without Hashem, we're nothing. That's the Ani L'Dodi V'Dodi Li of Elul, the Melech coming out to the field to greet us, because he knows that this time of Elul is a time where we feel so far away that all we're holding out for is just the faith of connecting to Hashem once again. Now, the second Mahalach, because I see that it's already taken a long time just to get through the first Mahalach, so I don't know how much we're actually going to be able to get through, but the first Mahalach actually, the second Mahalach, maybe we should just say to be continued next year. Figured going on for another 20 minutes would be what we call Yotzei Schar B'Hafsedo, is more detriment than benefit. So I hope that this does help you at least get some clarity and some insight into one of the most beautiful psalms. And then, of course, going back to our story with the looking foolish, to tie it all together, the idea being that even though we understand, as we mentioned, that we have our shortcomings, but the fact that we still come every Rosh Hashanah, every Yom Kippur, and we show Hashem, look, Hashem, I know, I get it. I got a lot of shortcomings. But I want to be better. I want to be closer. That's the closest of this month of Elul, knowing that they're holding on, right, coming, fighting, trying to find our own inspiration, our own passion at a time when we're so far from Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. That is how we meet Hashem halfway when he comes to greet us in the field. Okay, everybody should have a good rest of tshuva season, and Bezra Hashem, we'll talk about more tips for doing tshuva before Rosh Hashanah when we hopefully get out a recording for Parshas Kisavo.